Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Got him. Painter strikes out the side and closes the door to finish the end of a five-game losing streak. Astros win for the first time on this homestand. They get to shake hands here at home for just the second time in the last 11 home games, as they had lost 10 out of 11, actually second time in the last 12 home games, as they win tonight.
Oh, man, I hadn't realized it'd been that big of a nightmare at home. The Astros had been so good at home this year up until the month of July. Wow, 10 out of their last 12. That's good. They got to shake hands. It's like they're not even familiar with each other. Like, hey, I remember you. Let's shake hands. The Astros win last night. The nightmare is over, and the five-game losing streak is over, and they beat the Washington Nationals last night. 7-4, Todd Kallas on the call, Space City Home Network, as we come to you live from Texans training camp. It is day 7 of Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast, we are efforting to connect Seth Payne. Technical issues, we'll get that worked out. But in the meantime, you've got me live from Texans training camp. It's still dark outside here, sun coming up in just a little bit. Man, we got a lot to get to. The Astros losing streak is over. We've got a trade deadline coming up tomorrow. So we'll turn our attention to baseball at some point later here in the 6 o'clock hour. But let's get started with Texans training camp. It was day 6 yesterday. We got a lot of stuff to get to, man. We had Nick Caserio on the show yesterday. We'll be sprinkling in some of that throughout the program today. Some good players coming to the podium yesterday. We had our second padded practice yesterday, and we got a third one coming up today. From what I've heard, it's going to be a padded practice out here today. So a lot to get to on the show. I watched every snap of training camp yesterday, so I've got my observations, and we'll come right out of the chute with that. Today is day 7, so we've got the rest of this week, day off tomorrow, practice Friday. I would imagine a very light practice on Saturday. And then the team jumps on a bird to head to West Virginia. We'll be coming to you from West Virginia live next week as well. So we're looking forward to that. Looking forward to 70-degree temps out of practice. All right, so let's get things started yesterday with what we saw out here at the Methodist Training Center. At 6:20 today, I want to play some audio from the drive. Clint Sterner came up to me yesterday and whispered in my ear when we were underneath the tents that I'm looking at right over there where the media stands, and he says, "Chief, something's wrong with 7. And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. He looks like he's throwing. When he throws, he looks like he's throwing it pretty good." He's like, "No, man, something's wrong with 7. We will have audio from Clint Sterner from the drive at 6:20 today on why he thinks there may be something wrong with C.J. Stroud. And I'll give you my take on it from having watched C.J. Stroud. But we'll do that at 6:20. That was not in my observations. That was a Clint Sterner observation. So this first segment, my observations. Let's start with number one. I've got 5 of them. Number one. The offense had several really good moments yesterday. Probably a split decision, but I'll give it to the offense. I'm always inclined to give it to the defense just because this defense is so good. But the offense had some really good moments. Not early. 7-on-7 wasn't so hot. C.J. Stroud, in one of his only reps in 7-on-7, threw a pick to Kalen Bullock. Thumbs up to Kalen Bullock for securing the football. That was good. But the offense had some really good moments yesterday in the two extended 11-on-11 periods. They played a couple of real long team periods yesterday. They consistently did some good things both in the run game and in the pass game. And when I say in the pass game, I'm talking from, you know, C.J. to Davis. Davis Mills, who's had an excellent, excellent training camp. And even the backups, Graham Mertz and not so much Keaton Slovis, but Graham Mertz. Graham Mertz feels like he has like one throw every practice. You're like, "Oh, okay. I guess he's worth a 6th-round pick." Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday after the practice on how the offense has looked since putting the pads on.
"Hey, you see it, you know, things evening out more when you put the pads on. You know, defense kind of had the advantage there early on. We weren't in pads. Defense was making a lot of plays. And now just see things balancing themselves out. Offense is making plays daily. Our quarterbacks are doing a really nice job just placing the football in the right spot. And our receivers are making some really tough, contested catches. And that's what we want to be. We want to be a tough, physical football team. And you can't lose sight of that play on the outside from the receivers the DBs, how those guys play. That's the makings of a really physical team. So Jaden Higgins, he stepped up, made some really nice catches. Noel Hutchinson has done a really good job this year playing physical, really doing a great job at the catch point as well. We got a lot of guys on the offensive side who are getting, you know, really better, and it really jumps out in that receiver room to me.
Yeah, that he went deep on the receivers there. That matches what I was seeing out here yesterday. It was, if you're D'Amico Ryans, yesterday was almost kind of the perfect practice because the offense had enough good moments where you felt good about them, and the defense, in particular the guys you're going to rely on this year, were doing some things. You know, Danielle Hunter was still wreaking havoc. Will Anderson still looks amazing out here. You're getting some contributions in the team periods from guys like Jalen Smith, who they drafted in the third round, who, look, we know from the cornerback position, after Stingley and Lassiter, if one of those guys goes out, it kind of falls off a cliff until we see what Damon Arnette looks like in a real game, you know, with this sort of life renaissance that he's had. So I say all this to say, it was if you're just a Texans fan, I don't come out of that practice yesterday particularly overly concerned about either side of the football. It was a pretty balanced practice, as D'Amico said. Number two, offensive line. They did the same thing yesterday as they did on Monday, where they kept the units the same throughout both team drills. Largely the same through both team drills. The only spot they were flipping between the ones and the twos yesterday was the center spot. Jake Andrews was the center with the ones yesterday, whereas Jarrett Patterson was with the ones on Monday. And so they flip-flopped those two guys. Other than that, it's the same, which was from left to right, the ones, Cam Robinson, Lakin Tomlinson, Jake Andrews, Titus Howard, and Ariante Irsery consistently is getting reps with the ones at right tackle. That's two practices in a row where he's gotten reps with the ones. The twos, for what it's worth, left to right, Zach Thomas, Jalen Thomas, yesterday Jarrett Patterson, and then the right side of the line is Ed Ingram and Blake Fisher. Blake Fisher's had a rough camp. We'll talk about some of the mistakes in a bullet point here shortly. But here was Nick Caserio yesterday. He actually laid out a time frame for when they're looking to kind of settle on their who their first string is going to be throughout the rest of training camp and hopefully in week one.
Yeah, at some point that'll probably declare itself a little bit more. Probably once we get through another week here and then maybe right before Minnesota or after Minnesota, somewhere in there. At some point, if we think this is what the group is going to be, then, all right, we're going to go ahead and let those guys work together as much as possible. The reality is we probably have 7 or 8 players that are going to factor in to the actual game day roster. Mm-hmm. So you just want to make sure that whoever those players are going to be, they get enough reps. But we've talked about this. We feel like we have a lot of depth and a lot of competition at multiple spots. Some of it's starting to clear itself a little bit. You know, we have, honestly, 4 or 5 starting tackles or starting level tackles. Blake Fisher, I know Trent's not practicing yet. Even if you were to take Titus out from guard and put him outside. So feel like we have decent depth there. And then inside, we have a number of players, some guys that are center only, some guys that are guard only, some multi-position players inside. So I think these next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll see a little bit more and we'll have a better idea and better understanding. So really, at some point, all these guys are probably end up playing with one another. Yeah. Eventually, you want to get to the point where whoever the 5 are, from a communication standpoint, you want to be able to go out there and practice as much as possible in anticipation of being ready to go for the Rams.
All right, I think a couple observations there. Number one is that Juice Scruggs is nowhere to be found on the 2-deep right now out of practice. So Juice Scruggs, who was a second-round pick 2 years ago, might be on the outside looking in. It didn't even dawn on me Trent Brown hasn't practiced yet. So that's another veteran guy at the tackle position. When they're bringing 7 or 8 on game day, there's going to be some guys who you would have thought figured prominently into the future of this team who either aren't going to be on this roster or might be inactive on game day. Based on what we've seen, granted, just through a week of training camp, there's still a lot more training camp to go. There's preseason games where a lot's going to be determined. But it sounds like there's going to be a lot determined and maybe nailed down before the first preseason game. I was a little surprised at that answer from Nick Caserio that it was going to be that soon. And I'm no offensive line expert, but my thought would be they take a couple actual preseason games against, you know, live bullets. Now, they're going to have a joint practice with the Panthers, joint practice with the Lions as well. There'll be plenty of opportunities, and nobody's going to be a sacred cow in all this. They may determine these are our ones going into Minnesota, but if Ariante Irsery struggles and has a bad game or a bad week of practice, then you're not going to leave him out there. So that's number two. And by the way, I think the offensive line looks better this time this year than it did this time last year when they had everybody in ink. in the ones. So it looks better. Quick observations here because we're up against it. Lots of quick game yesterday. The quick game is going to be a big part of this offense. Obviously, they want to run the football, but getting the ball out quick, CJ taking the easy money, taking a profit. They did a lot of that in the install period where they're just kind of walking through things. Ton of quick game in the 11-on-11. Everybody getting involved, wide receivers, tight ends, running backs. The running backs look good catching the ball out of the backfield. So there was that. Lots of quick game yesterday. That's number three. Number four, there were mistakes. Good day for the offense overall, but I mentioned CJ threw another interception. He's thrown a few picks in this camp. Something worth keeping an eye on. He's thrown a few picks. Now, this could be like a spring training situation in baseball where, you know, pitchers out there in spring training are throwing pitches they wouldn't normally throw because they're working on things and teams are taking him yard. CJ, they're like the pick that he threw to Kalen Bull, or there was a pick he threw or a near pick he threw on Monday. That might have been the one that, yeah, that was the one that hit Kalen in the chest and wasn't a pick. CJ probably throws that ball into the stands in a regular season game. He's just working on some things. I'm not overly concerned about that. But there were penalties, pre-snap penalties, at least three false starts that I counted. Blake Fisher got yanked after one of them. The coaches were pissed. So there were mistakes. It wasn't totally clean on the part of the offense yesterday. And number five, I'll give credit where credit's due. I kind of do when I do my five things. By the way, follow me on social media at Sean T. Pendergast or on Instagram at Sean.Pendergast. And I'm posting a video every day summarizing practice like I'm doing right now. I do like to give out a play of the day. For me, it was a tie yesterday. They were both Davis Mills throws. Davis Mills had a throw to John Metchie, I don't know, 15, 20 yards downfield to Mills' left that Metchie had to go to the ground. Made a really nice catch. Metchie had a good practice yesterday. He needs it. It's going to be tough making the team at wide receiver. And then Davis Mills had another one to Jaden Higgins, probably 20, 25-yard throw along the same sideline. But unlike Metchie, who had to go to the ground and stay in bounds to get it, Higgins had to kind of toe tap, and it was contested. He had to go to the ground, made a nice catch. They've hit on something with these rookie wide receivers the Texans have. All right, so there you go. There's your training camp summary through the eyes of Sean T. Pendergast. Hopefully you guys trust me on these, all right? It's all about trust. All right, we're efforting Seth. As soon as we get Seth connected and hooked up, it'll be Payne and Pendergast, not just Pendergast. Up next, I mentioned it, Clint Sterner has a theory or a fear over the workload of C.J. Stroud out here at Texans training camp. We'll let you hear what Clint Sterner from The Drive had to say. We've got some highlights from our conversation with Nick Caserio coming up as well. The Texans GM met with us yesterday. You can get that whole interview on the Odyssey app in the Payne and Pendergast podcast section. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. We are close to getting Seth on here, I do believe. So once we do, we will we'll make that happen. All right, let's do this. I'll go ahead and play the audio from Clint. I really wanted to get Seth's take on this. I guess there's no crime in playing it again because it's only about a minute long. But Clint Sterner comes up to me yesterday at practice, and I preface everything by saying Clint is the former NFL quarterback. So his opinion matters on stuff like this. He's the only one of us out here standing underneath those white tents who's actually been through an NFL training camp as a quarterback that I can think of. Spencer Tillman was out there yesterday, but he was a running back. So Clint has dealt with the rep load thing at an NFL training camp before. And he comes up to me and he says, "Hey, Chief, I think something's up with Seven." And I said, "What do you think's up with Seven? Because every time he throws a football, it looks pretty good coming off his hands." And he thought, well, I'll let Clint explain, because he pretty much said on The Drive yesterday what he said to me at practice yesterday. Here was Clint. He's got a concern over exactly what C.J. Stroud's workload at practice looks like right now.
I'm not out here trying to tell you what's wrong. I'm not here trying to tell you that there's some kind of crazy injury. I'm telling you right now, watching five of the six practices that have taken place, something ain't right with C.J. Stroud.
You just by you. You're not saying that you know anything. You have any inside information, but for you, what you're seeing numbers wise in terms of reps and all of that the last, well, since camp started, is just unusual, and you and tips you to think like something's up because this isn't normal.
I'm not positive, Ron, because I didn't sit there and count every single rep, but they did two team periods and one 7-on-7 period And I know in one of the teams he got two reps, and I know in the 7-on-7 he got two reps. Point is, I'm not going to pin myself down to a precise number there because I was trying to watch other things. But there is today 7-on-7 and team combined. I bet you C.J. Stroud got a single digit rep. I bet it was 9 or fewer.
To me, the hope is that they're maybe potentially still cautiously protecting his arm in a way they did during mandatory minicamp.
But that in itself, in itself is something.
Okay, so did Clint kick a bee's nest yesterday with this? I'm getting messages on platforms that I don't get messages on from people. By and large, nobody Facebook messages me. If your only avenue to get in touch with me is via Facebook Messenger, we're probably not that super tight. And I'm getting messages from people on there. Sean, I got to know. I'm hearing Clint. I mean, I must have gotten 8 to 10 messages yesterday while Clint is giving this out on the air, while he's dishing on the air about this. And look, I again, Clint's been through training camps before. He knows what normal looks like. I have not tracked what the reps early in camp are with the ones. It's never dawned on me to sit down and see what the percentage is of how many reps the starter is getting. Maybe because it's probably normal for the starter to get more reps than the other guys. I will say that in certain drills, that has stood out to me that they're done with CJ after like 2 snaps, and then Davis Mills gets like 6 snaps. There's an easy way, I guess, to get more clarity on this, and it's to ask D'Amico Ryans or Nick Haley about it. Both of them are going to meet with the media at some point here in the next 24 to 48 hours. At least one of them, D'Amico, will meet with the media sometime in the next 6 hours. So it's probably a fair question about the reps. Ask the coach. I don't know that we're going to get a great answer. We didn't get a great answer from D'Amico when CJ was sitting out of OTAs, and the lack of clarity on that, I thought, caused a lot of the uproar. You know, as it turns out, minicamp rolls around, and he's zipping the ball down the field. So I think it's an interesting hypothesis by Clint. He obviously has years of experience in the NFL to back that up. My worry level is not that high, because I think if it was something super urgent or very dangerous, that C.J. Stroud wouldn't be out here throwing a football. And he's looked good when he's thrown it. I can't recall a rep where he's really cut it loose, and I know Clint made that point several times yesterday that, boy, have we really seen him throw, really, really unleash one. And I can't recall one here off the top of my head in the padded practices. Now, in minicamp he did. I can remember a deep shot he took to Jaden Higgins. Jaden Higgins made a great one-handed catch about 40, 45, 50 yards downfield. My concern level, my DEFCON level on this, DEFCON 1 being the most worried. A lot of people get that wrong. DEFCON 1 is the height of concern. I'm like a DEFCON probably 5 or 4 on this right now. We'll wait and see how it plays out. We'll see. We'll ask D'Amico today about that, about the reps, and see where it goes from there. But, boy, Clint had people talking yesterday, man. He had people talking. All right, let's go to Nick Caserio. We had Nick Caserio on the show yesterday, Texans executive vice president and general manager. I thought this was one of the better conversations we've had with him in terms of insight, where this team is in certain spots. We played the audio in the open about Nick kind of laying out the timeline for the offensive line and when they expect that to kind of come together organically. It's kind of interesting, like, it's come together organically. We expect it to come together organically on this date. He didn't say that. I'm just kind of joking around about that. But he said, you know, sometimes either shortly before or shortly after the Minnesota game. If I had to guess, I would guess after. If it was me, I would want to see this group of ones in a game against, you know, live bullets in a preseason game, you know, granted, it'll be like 2 series maybe. But I'd want to see that before I make any determinations on the depth chart. This was interesting. You know, Seth read Bill Belichick's book, read it in written word form and listened to it in audio form, which I feel like you deserve some sort of purple heart or badge of courage or whatever for listening to an audio book read by Bill Belichick. That feels like something, if you lost your fantasy league, you'd have to go do. Listen to Bill Belichick drone for 8 hours about winning. Seth really liked the book. And one of Seth's big takeaways was, man, D'Amico Ryans and Bill Belichick are way more similar than you think. So we asked somebody who's worked with both of them, Nick Caserio for 2 decades with Bill Belichick, and obviously Nick Caserio for 2.5 years with D'Amico Ryans. Does he agree?
No, that's accurate. And you guys have had a perspective, D'Amico as a player, now as a coach. He's a no-nonsense, no-BS guy. He's old school. Like that's what he believes in. That's how he was trained. He's the greatest person like in the history of the world. I mean, I've been on this show, talked about how much I love him, how great of a person that he is, his priorities are right, how important faith and family is. But when it comes to football, like he has that trigger, he has that switch, and he doesn't really have a lot of time. But the reality is none of us have time for a bunch of things that aren't really impacting winning. So the quicker we can arrive at that point, the quicker everybody has an understanding of that. Winning is hard in this league, so what you're trying to do is minimize the things that aren't going to help you win and focus on the things that are that actually matter, which is work, which is intent, which is showing up on a day-to-day basis, which is being consistent and just keeping your mouth shut and working. And that's how D'Amico was as a player, and he's not really operating that differently as a head coach than he did as a player. So he has that trigger. He has that switch. He's very invested in the process, and I think the players understand that, and, you know, it's exciting to be a part of that.
Different personality types, but you agree with Seth's assessment that the two are similar in key ways.
Yeah, Seth's right about a lot of stuff, so in this particular case, I would agree with that.
That's right, Sean. Did you hear that?
I forgot about that at the end. That wasn't my implication that Seth isn't right about things, Nick. I just look at it from the perspective, you know, Nick kind of took it to where what D'Amico was like as a player. And obviously Nick was not here when D'Amico was a player, but he scouted D'Amico, was part of the Patriots plenty of times going against D'Amico, both as a Texan and I would imagine as a Philadelphia Eagle once or twice as well. And that's how I look at it is Bill Belichick probably would have loved to have had D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans probably would have made I know there's going to be a lot of you that are going to drive off the road when I say this, because you hate when I bring up the P word, Patriots. But D'Amico Ryans probably would have made a damn good New England Patriot back in the day. Bill Belichick would have loved having him. Would have loved having him play for him. Yeah, I think it's just interesting. The guy, you know, guys can have sort of the same set of credos, sort of the same codes, and they can have completely different personalities. And I think D'Amico and Belichick are probably extremely similar behind the scenes and how they handle accountability and things like that. They're probably more similar personality-wise. The difference is that D'Amico is probably just friendlier than Belichick. Just he's an overall friendlier human being, at least outwardly in football environments. All right, let's keep it moving with Nick Caserio. Speaking of which, dovetail off of that, Caserio talked about leadership styles and the accountability with mistakes. They've done a very good job, I think, of finding guys that adhere to, not even the swarm mentality thing, not even the thing where guys just love hitting other human beings, but just accountability, guys that love football, and Nick Caserio talked about that.
No, I think that's the essence of leadership. All of us have to make a number of decisions on a day-to-day basis in our roles. Not every one of them is going to be right, and it's okay to admit, you know what, I was wrong about that, or you know what, I made a mistake, it's not good enough, and then just really work to get it fixed. So I think when you take accountability, individual accountability, hopefully people see that and respect that, and as long as it's done in a genuine fashion. Mm-hmm. So if you're wrong, don't be afraid to speak up and say, you know what, I'm wrong, I made a bad decision, or you know what, I don't know, let me go find out the information. There's a selfless nature to that, and it's okay to show, you know what, you're human and we all make mistakes, and that's part of life and that's part of growing up. So I think that's definitely a leadership trait or attribute that's important for people to possess. I mean, sometimes people act like they have all the answers and they want you to know about that. You know, at some point you're gonna drown those people out and not want to listen to them. So, but it's an interesting observation. I'd say there's certainly a lot of validity to that, just, you know, from my perspective.
All right, so Nick Caserio talking about leadership and D'Amico Ryan's accountability with mistakes. Let's keep it moving with Caserio here. I want to get to some of the specific player stuff. Titus Howard, a holdover from the offensive line last year. Look, when they were dumping guys last year, they trade Kenyon Green, they trade Laremy Tunsil, they cut Shaq Mason, and it felt like when you drive by one of those lots, you know, in like West U, where there's an old house, and they just tear everything down, and they're trying to build back up a much nicer new house. You don't normally tear down the house but leave the kitchen sitting there. You just tear the whole thing down and say, we're starting over. That's what it felt like they were doing on the offensive line when they were moving everybody. It wouldn't have shocked me if Titus Howard were gone, if they're just like, you know what, we're just starting this thing over again. They were that bad last year. And the scary thing is they were more talented than their productivity level or lack thereof, would have dictated. But they kept Titus Howard, and Titus really does seem to be embracing a leadership role on this team. I think it's great for Titus to not have Laremy Tunsil in the building anymore, doing the little brother thing, the little bro thing with Laremy Tunsil. That was not working for Titus Howard. The only thing it did was get him a contract. That's what Laramie's best at, pass protection and getting contracts. So Titus did get a contract. But I think Titus is embracing this new role. He's playing right guard now. We've not heard a peep about him not playing right tackle. That was a thing a couple of years ago when he put right tackle for the Texans in his Twitter bio. Here was Nick Caserio yesterday on Titus Howard at this training camp compared to prior training camps.
Titus has been here for a number of years now, and honestly, he's probably seen as much change as anybody that's on the team. And, you know, to his credit, I mean, he's done a number of things that are very selfless. Like, we've asked him to change positions. He's played multiple spots. He really hasn't complained and bitched and moaned about it, so it kind of speaks to him. Titus is a good kid. He works hard. He's got a good attitude. There's been some ups and downs throughout the course of his career, but he continues to work and you get better. So, you know, we're glad he's here, and, you know, he's played good football for us. And even going back to, you know, my first season in 21 when he had to go out there and play left tackle, you know, he showed the ability to do that. So, you know, Titus deserves a lot of credit. It hadn't been easy, but I think he's really made a conscious effort to sort of work through it and try to do the right things. And the big thing with any player, and Titus included, is continue to work, continue to make progress, continue to improve, and do what you can to help the football team. And, you know, he's certainly embraced that.
All right. I like that they've got Titus Howard at right guard instead of left guard this year. You know, guys talk all the time about having to switch hands, you know, having to be ambidextrous. You know, it's a different playing on the left side of the line than it is the right side of the line. Him making all those moves from right tackle to left guard, he wasn't great as a left guard. In fact, at times he was really bad. At times he was all right. I think he might be made more for guard than tackle, just physique-wise. But he's playing right guard when he's been steeped in playing right tackle through the years, I think just that very basic thing, he's going to be more comfortable there. And Titus really seems to be embracing that leadership role with this offensive line. The offensive line right now, and it's hard to look worse than they did early in camp last year. I mean, it was bad. I remember last year in camp, CJ, that was the only time I can remember CJ, like, really lashing out, was early in camp last year when they had that in ink number one unit. Now, here, they seem to have settled early on a group, at least four of the five spots. But early on, the offensive line, they don't look great. And, you know, there's certainly been practices where the defense made them look bad, but it's better than last year so far, in my opinion. Not a high bar to clear, but if they weren't clearing it, we'd be really, really worried about that. All right, that was Nick Caserio yesterday. You can get the entire interview up on our podcast page, the Payne and Pendergast podcast page on the Odyssey app. We went about 40 minutes with Nick and some really, really good stuff on there. All right, we got a lot to get to still, man. Let's circle back to some headlines. An update from Nick Caserio on Christian Harris. We've got the Astros winning a game last night. We've got trade deadline rumors going on with the Astros. We've got a prominent name in the NFL reporting to camp and a whole lot more. We'll get to all of that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Still efforting Seth. Connection issues, technical issues. We'll get it worked out. If we don't, we don't. If we do, we do. But we move onward. Day 7 of Texans training camp. We are live at the Methodist Training Center. I believe we're getting another padded practice today, which is good. That's the best. The sprinklers are on right now. Boy, the sprinklers have been on for a while. That's going to be a wet field. That'll be fun. Play a little slip and slide out there. All right, let's get to Texans training camp. Nick Caserio met with us. He sat down with us yesterday here on Payne and Pendergast. We had a nice long conversation with the Texans executive vice president and general manager. About a 40-minute conversation that you can get on the Odyssey app. Among the things, I went and checked the text page afterwards, so I was glad that I asked about Christian Harris because there were about 15 texts. I went, ask about Christian Harris. Now, Christian Harris, the way I frame this question to Nick on the update about Christian Harris, who, again, is not practiced yet, but he's not on the PUP list. He's not on the non-football injury list. He's on the main roster, but it's been very similar to last year when he, to this point, had not practiced nor even been seen out here. Now, he's at least been out here a couple of times during practice in a hoodie with his teammates, even jogged out here the other day. Everything throughout the spring has been an indication that Christian Harris is going to be ready to go at some point here, but we asked Nick Caserio about it yesterday. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this last Tuesday. There's a number of players that are at different stages in terms of their development relative to their health. I would say specifically in Christian's situation, the way the rules work with NFI, PUP, etc., if they're on one of those lists, there's certain parameters and limitations in terms of what they can participate in. So as a player makes progress, let's say you want to put them into a walkthrough in the evening or something like that, you just have the flexibility to do that. You're sort of keeping him alive. So you just, every case is a little bit different. So we're trying to do what we think is in the best interest of each individual player. So Christian's getting closer. He's starting to make some progress. So really, I would say that was more of a mechanical thing. There wasn't any funny business or anything like that. It's just trying to look at the situation. What do we think makes the most sense? Sometimes can keep a player a little bit more engaged when he's not on one of those lists for a myriad of reasons. So I'd say, again, there is a thought process and a rationale behind it. I'd say that's probably the best explanation for his situation.
Okay, let me, a couple things that I want to be clear on here. One, I have no problem with them being cautious with Christian Harris. Whatever the hell was going on with him last year was weird. I think it was weird to the Texans. We did interviews with Nick at least three times on this show while Christian Harris was rehabbing that injury. Probably interviewed him during training camp about it, then at least twice asked him about it during the season. And my big takeaway from those conversations was that the whatever injury Christian Harris had, there were a ton of curveballs that came with it that they were not expecting. Eventually, he got healthy enough to get on the field, but he wasn't productive enough to stay on the field. Christian Harris is a really talented football player. I want him to be healthy for this season. That's my first takeaway. I got no problem with them being cautious given how last year went. It's a big year for Christian Harris. This is a contract year for him, so I'm sure he wants to be out there practicing and playing and getting the best version of him. I also listen to that answer from Nick and think, like, okay, if they had to play a playoff game on Sunday, I would guess Christian Harris would be active for that game. That's just a guess by me. I'm just guessing, by the way, the whole thing's been framed, that they're not designating him with any of the PUP and NFI stuff, so he can do things that maybe aren't on his regimen right now. You know, he can do the walkthroughs if they need him or things like that. He looks like he's moving okay when he's out here. He looks like he's walking just fine. All right, let's shift gears and go to the Astros. The Astros win last night 7-4 over the Washington Nationals. Joe Espada meeting with the media after the game saying, this is a good one. We scored seven runs and we grinded out some at-bats.
Yes, we did. Our bats, running scoring position today were phenomenal. I thought we put some really good at bats from the beginning. We got their starter out, 74 pitches, and then we went to work with, against their bullpen. I thought we grinded our bats. We hit some balls hard. We did some small ball very well. We found ways to score runs.
Yeah, it was good. And for the second straight game, they scored first. Our nightmare is over. They actually won the game this time. Two nights ago, they lost the game, but at least they're scoring first now on teams. They'll go for the series win today against the Nationals at Minute Maid Park. The big story over the next 24 hours isn't going to be whatever the outcome is. Oh, and by the way, the lead in the division is 4 games over the Mariners and 5 games over the Rangers, who are suddenly in the rearview mirror again. I don't like that, mostly because I don't like the Rangers. The big thing over the next 24 to 33 hours, 5 o'clock, Thursday is the trade deadline, 5 o'clock tomorrow. That'll be, I think, an even bigger storyline with the Astros and whatever happens in this afternoon's game between them and the Nationals. Reports yesterday from Ken Rosenthal and Chandler Rome of The Athletic that the Astros may be pursuing Dylan Cease. Chandler did a good job kind of framing it that this feels like it might be a Jim Crane thing. Jim Crane likes star power. He does. He likes two things, and these two things are in direct conflict with each other if they go after Dylan Cease. He likes star power, and he likes not going over the competitive balance tax. If they trade for Dylan Cease, they're going to have to go over the CBT and pay some tax. And that's something that Jim Crane, the behavior of the team throughout this season has been one of a team that has no desire to go over the competitive balance tax and pay a luxury tax. They had to do it last year. This would make them a repeat offender. They traded Ryan Presley so they wouldn't have to do it. They got rid of Rafael Montero, a chunk of his salary, just to to stay copacetic with that threshold. The fact of the matter is, this team, while incredibly undermanned, has done an amazing job of building a four-game lead in their division. And it may end up that the trade deadline reinforcements that they get are guys that are all in Sugarland right now. Like 30% of the Space Cowboys roster last night was Astro guys. Arrighetti, Garcia, J.P. France, Christian Javier, they're all at Sugarland right now. Jeremy Pena, we should mention, got the start for Sugarland last night in a rehab start. Went 0 for 2 with a walk and a hit by pitch. That sums up the Astros season right there, from an injury standpoint, like an injury luck standpoint. I mean, the season's been a good one in the standings. But from a weird injury luck thing, Jeremy Pena, and I didn't watch the game, the Sugarland game, so I don't know where he got hit. Might have gotten hit on his thigh. I don't know. We know that the reason he's been out for 6 weeks is because he got beamed in the ribs. Just that Jeremy Pena gets hit by a pitch on a rehab assignment, and the reason he's on a rehab assignment is that because he got hit by a pitch. I just had to chuckle ironically this morning when I saw that. So, trade deadline coming up. Dylan Cease on the Astros radar, according to Ken Rosenthal and Chandler Rome of The Athletic. Quick NFL news. Trey Hendrickson plans to report to Bengals camp. Trey Hendrickson, who has done as good a job as you can possibly do trying to agitate for a new deal from one of the cheapest, penniest pinching teams in the NFL, who've taken care of some guys, though. I mean, they took care of T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase within the last year. But Trey Hendrickson, the leading sack getter in the NFL last year, they've not yet taken care of him, at least not to the degree that he wants to. They've exchanged offers, but they're not anywhere close. Trey Hendrickson had threatened to sit out the season if he had to get a new deal, which to me is the dumbest thing that you can do because your contract tolls for another year. It's not the contract doesn't expire when you sit out the year. You're still under contract to the Bengals. So if you're just trying to make a point, it's a very expensive point to make. Trey Hendrickson plans to report to Bengals camp, which I think is smart. Dude, just play out your contract for the $16 or $17 million and then get the hell out of there. You knew what you were getting into when you signed with the Bengals. That's why I shed very few tears for these people that complain about their contracts with ratchet front offices and ownership like the Cincinnati Bengals. So go in, play under your crappy contract this year, and get out and go be the biggest free agent on the market. You'll be the biggest fish in the free agency pond next year. And you can go to an actually well-run team. So he's reporting. Hendrickson's doing the same thing. I remember Andre Johnson did that one time. He wanted a new contract, and he held out for like 2 days. Or like maybe a day. Maybe an hour. I think he held out for 6 minutes in the parking lot, and then he went in the building. DeAndre Hopkins did that one time too. Which I say that with respect. Like that, like Andre's a guy who just couldn't be away from his teammates and the work. DeAndre Hopkins probably more his teammates than the actual practices. He didn't like practice as much as other guys did. Why did I do that? It's a Trey Hendrickson story, and I'm doing a drive-by on DeAndre Hopkins. That was uncalled for. All right, Sean Pendergast with you. Seth Payne, we're efforting right now. Johnny Harris might stop by a little early as well. All right, I love this exercise that ESPN does, especially because the Texans are number one in it. Talent, core talent under the age of 25 on the roster. The Texans were number one last year. Are we the champs again this year? We will have that for you coming up next.